Hello and welcome to another edition of Coffee Talk on the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Trevor Huth, and of course I am joined by Nate the Great Kosher. Nate, how are you doing today?
Doing well. You know what, Trevor, I realized you always ask me how I'm doing, but I never ask you how you're doing. So how are you doing, Trevor?
I am doing very, very well. Nothing to complain about here. We're about to talk some baseball. That's always a fun time. A great way to start the week for me, honestly, especially having an off day today from work. So it's nice that I just got chill, relax, and now record a podcast. So
it is a good day.
Yeah, right. There are worse things to do in a day. So, Nate, last week we spent a lot of time talking about the trade deadline. I think it was the whole episode, actually. So,
yes.
We feel prepared for the upcoming barrage of trades that may or may not happen towards the end of this month. It is still not the end of the month, but the stove's heating up a little bit. I think that's a great place to start this week's podcast. And things started with a trade between the Brewers and the Rays, where the Brewers got Aaron Civale and the Rays got infield prospect Gregory Berrios. How do you feel about that trade?
Well, I think we had maybe talked about the Brewers as a team needed to make a move. I don't remember if we did or not, actually, now that I think about it. I don't remember, but it's not surprising to me. They've done better this season than people expected, and they've had injuries to their rotation. So, I think it's a good move, honestly. I mean, Civale, I guess he's had some success. He's better last season than he has been overall this season. But a solid arm, I mean, he can give you some innings. Obviously, the Brewers lost Robert Gasser, who we talked about. And then Wade Miley also went down, and Woodruff has been out the whole season. So, you know, those longtime pitchers, Burns and Woodruff, gone or injured. So I think that it makes sense. I don't honestly know about the prospect, if he is anything. Berrios, he's hitting .325 at Class A. Looks like it's kind of a speedster, maybe. He had 18 steals, one home run in 61 games.
Yeah, Gregory Berrios is the prospect that goes back to the Rays, which, if you're a prospect going to the Rays, that's generally good news for you.
True.
Berrios is a defense-first infield prospect, shortstop. He's really slick with the glove. His swing, I'm watching it as I'm talking. That's why it sounds like I'm thinking, I'm sure. But his swing is... looks like kind of quick, compact, but that's not what he's known for. So he hasn't really been known for his bat. It's going to be interesting to see what the Rays do to try to improve that. He's in high A right now, so he's not a guy you have to worry about quite yet. But, you know, if he continues to hit and hit well with the Rays, then he might be somebody you're eventually paying attention to. But in terms of fantasy baseball and what we're talking about on this podcast, Aaron Civale is kind of the part of that trade that you want to be more concerned about. And do you like the fit of Civale with the Brewers and with their home ballpark and everything, Nate?
That's a good question. I mean, the Brewers as a whole, I should probably know more. I should know this. I'm Wisconsin native, but as a pitcher or hitter's park, I don't know where that ranks. I would guess in the middle. I'm going to look that up.
I remember at one point it being called a humidor. I think it was Christian Yelich who said that when he was excited about somebody coming over to the Brewers. So I imagine it would lean hitter, if anything, more than pitcher, but I don't know for sure, I guess.
Let's see. Okay.
But Aaron Civale going to the Brewers, while you look that up, I for me is always interesting anytime a pitcher goes to the Brewers, because they've done a pretty good job of developing different pitchers. So I think, you know, if they I think it could be good for Savali. Maybe they don't touch him and just let him go. Who knows? But if they work at it, I think that could be a really good acquisition for them.
So I looked at a quick list here. And this is just this season. The number of home runs and American Family Field, which it's now known as, teams have hit the fifth most home runs. So both teams during the games, Brewers home game. So yeah, I guess better hitter park than a pitcher park. And Savali had been doing better as of late. I mentioned, I saw his ERA had been lower, but his season overall, not great, but I think they probably just need someone who's like looking for a middle of the road guy who can fill in. You know, he's not going to be starting game seven of the World Series, but they just need some innings.
Right. I mean, Dallas Keuchel is presently in their starting rotation. And I don't mean that negatively towards anybody, but also, did you happen to see the stats from Dallas Keuchel's most recent start at the time of recording this podcast? Because it was weird.
He went against
the Dodgers. This happened last night, actually. He went 4.1 innings, gave up three hits, did not give up a single run, also did not strike out a single batter, and walked five.
Ooh. That is a really weird line.
4.1 shutout innings, but you walk five, don't strike anybody out. I mean, I guess it works for real life baseball.
That's funny because he had a stint with the Diamondbacks, I think, at the beginning of last season. And in one of my deep leagues that I play in, I remember he came back, I think, and had some starts with the Twins, if I recall. Diamondbacks. Okay, Diamondbacks was 2 years ago. Twins was last year. And I remember he had like one really good start, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to add him. And then his other two starts were bad. Obviously, he had a nice career. I mean, he had a good, like, almost probably 10-year run in there. But
and won a Cy Young, didn't he? In 20, he did. Let's say 15, he won a Cy Young?
2015 with the Astros, he went 20-8. I pull up his.
My random year career. Guessing worked out.
You got it. Two-time All-Star with the Astros. And I guess really since he left the Astros, he had one good year with the White Sox, and then he's bounced around a lot. So I don't think there's much left in the tank is the point. And so the Brewers needed the reinforcements.
Well, also with the Astros, didn't they just bang trash cans when he would throw off-speed pitches?
Maybe. He was missing those garbage cans at the other.
They must have known what the other hitters were sitting on. So if they were sitting curveball, they bang the trash cans and throw a fastball. Who knows? But Dallas Keuchel's still in the league. He's only had three starts. So this is kind of a break glass in case of emergency thing. But yes, he is currently in the Brewers rotation. So it makes sense that they would go and acquire more pitching. And they got Aaron Savali for what seems like it'd be a pretty decent price. I mean, Baseball America had Gregory Berrios, late 20s, 26th, I believe, on their most recent Brewers list. So the Rays are betting that they can turn his bat into something, which they very well could. They've shown that they can. But he can play a great defense, so we'll see what happens there. Another trade that happened quietly. Austin Slater was traded from the Giants to the Reds, and in return, the Giants receive left-handed reliever Alex Young. Not an exciting deal by any means.
No.
But it gives both teams a little bit of depth at the individual positions. The Reds will get some outfield depth and some time in the outfield, and the Giants get potentially some bullpen depth, who I'd imagine might be up and down throughout the rest of the season unless he does really well.
Yeah, this is a good example of what we talked about last week. You know, we were mocking up these exciting trades or trades with bigger names, but these are the most common things that usually happen, these types of transactions. Both teams hoping to add a little depth, looking toward the playoffs, or trying to take advantage of a team selling or buying, et cetera. And yeah, Austin Slater, I'm looking him up here. He has a career 254 batting average. Basically a part-time guy. It looks like, based on his numbers, probably a platoon outfielder. But, you know, injuries happen, and it's another bat for the clubhouse.
Yeah, it certainly is. And also, it sends Austin Slater from hitting at San Francisco's ballpark to hitting in Great American Ballpark. And I mean, his highest home run total in a season was 12 back in 2021. And since then he's hit, 13 total, in 2022, 2023, and so far in 2024. So obviously power is not a huge part of Austin Slater's game, but when you go from, you know, that when you go from, is that Oracle? Oh my gosh, I'm completely blanking on the name. That's what I'm.
I think it is Oracle now.
But yeah, when you go from there and then all of a sudden you're at Great American Ballpark, your stock as a hitter might go up, especially if he can lift the ball. I don't know what those numbers say, but if he lifts the ball, that could be a good trade for him. And on the other side, the only time, if you look at the numbers in the career of Alex Young, that he had any sort of success at the major league level came with the San Francisco Giants. So clearly they knew something, they knew how to use him. He's kind of struggled everywhere else. So that could be another interesting thing if they can get him back to when he had a sub 3 ERA as a short stint reliever. Maybe if you're in deep leagues or save holds leagues, whatever, he might become a relevant name, someone to keep an eye on. So this trade could potentially work out for both sides.
Yeah. And one more stat on Slater. I saw career 284 average against lefties. So probably a platoon, as I said, in splits positively against the left-hander. So yeah, their trades are slowly starting to trickle out. We have probably 3 more weeks, but it'll be fun to keep talking about these as they happen.
Absolutely. And the rumors are already flying. I mean, just in the last 24 hours, the Rangers might be fire sailing some people. So there might be guys like Max Scherzer and a few others. I can't remember all the names off the top of my head, but they've already said that they're going to be looking to trade those guys. Jazz Chisholm looks like he might be on the move.
I heard that one.
Right. So there are just names flying right now, and that's part of the fun. Not every one of these people are going to get traded, but that's part of the fun. So Nate, we're going to change gears a little bit here away from trades. We have, I don't know, probably about 7 minutes until we're going to take a break. I want you to keep that in mind, because I'm going to say 2 words and then I'm just going to let you talk, because I feel like you might talk about it for a long time. You guys can't see it. He's smiling. He knows the 2 words I'm about to say. So Nate, I'm going to turn my microphone off and just let you talk as long as you would like. 2 words. I want your reaction to it. Brooks Lee. Go.
Yes. I was hoping those were the 2 words you were going to say. Otherwise, I may not have been prepared. But yeah, Brooks Lee, talked about him a few weeks back. I had went to a recent St. Paul Saints game, saw him in action. He had 3 doubles that day. He had been on fire. Finally got that call up, and I would say if he's still available in your fantasy league, you need to make a move. He has done nothing but hit since he has come up, and I have the stats here. In his first 5 games, he hit safely in every game. 9 hits. He has 1 home run, 6 ribbies, and he has a 1.160 on base plus slugging and hitting .474. So it seems like he's carried over that strong run in AAA, didn't even miss a beat as he steps into the majors. And as he continues to hit, I think he'll probably get a chance to play every day because of Royce Lewis being hurt. And Royce Lewis, another guy, young hitter who's very exciting, but tends to get hurt a lot. And so that's already happened. That is why Brooks Lee got a chance. So if he keeps this up, I mean, he got a very strong second half of the season. and definitely make some noise in your fantasy league. So it's exciting to see. And I think, Trevor, we may have said, called him more of a hit over power when we were talking about him. And I think that's probably still the case, but he does have some pop. But right now, obviously going to help you out with batting average. He's on fire. And then the Twins have a pretty good lineup, so probably the RBI would be there too, playing in that offense.
Yeah, we did absolutely have him hit over power. At least I did. I would confidently probably call his hit tool plus in my evaluations of it. I think it depends on the evaluator, but you're looking at like a 45-50 power fringe to average. So he's still going to hit home runs. He's still going to have some power. But I think overall, as things progress in his career and he has, you know, time and at bats under his belt, I think you're going to see more, or his numbers will be geared more towards hit than power. Mm-hmm. Which is fine. And he's hit the ground running. And there also could be a stretch where he struggles mightily because it is hard to be a major league hitter. You know, the pitchers will adjust. He'll have to figure out how to adjust off that, right? It's a whole cat and mouse game that gets played, but he's been hitting absolutely fantastic right now.
Yeah, he has. Also wanted to point out, so far he's started 6 games. He started 5 games, 4 at third base, 1 at shortstop. And then he DH'd. So he must have switched or subbed in as a shortstop, something. He's played those 3 positions. So he probably will gain shortstop and third base eligibility is what I'm trying to say, as the season progresses here.
Yeah, that's awesome, and it's really cool to see Brooks Lee coming up and having success. Since we talked about one of your guys,
mm-hmm.
I would like to point out one thing. If you look at numbers over the last month, Colt Keith has,
yes,
at the time of recording this, last 85 at bats or so, a 306 average, 5 home runs, 10 RBIs, and a 878 OPS. I mean, he's starting to figure it out a little bit. It's not, prospect development is not linear, right? It could take some time. Spencer Torkelson could take some time. Reed Detmers could take some time. Colt Keith, yep, struggled a lot at the beginning of the year, and people were like, well, was he ready? Is he as good as we think he is? But it seems like he's starting to figure it out, as is Jackson Churio and you know, as, yeah, is Wyatt Langford, right? These prospects who started slow, they're starting to figure it out. And honestly, Nate, I think there's an element of, there is actually just so much pressure from fans and pressure from the outside for some of these guys to get promoted quickly. I think some of these guys might just be rushed a little bit. They might just get there too quick. And I was just thinking about this today. And I know I've mentioned it before, like I think Torque was rushed and that kind of stuff, but mm-hmm. it just seems like some of these guys struggle mightily when they first get there. And I go to the Cardinals right now. You have 2 prep hitters from the same draft class, both of whom had plenty of hype behind them. One of them was Jordan Walker, and the other is Mason Winn. Jordan Walker was on a faster path than Mason Winn, and that partly was due to partly due to performance, and I get all that. But Mason Winn had that extra time to kind of season himself and figure it out. And Mason Winn's come up and hit 289 with 4 home runs, 9 stolen bases, you know, through his first 300 or so at bats, a little less than 300 at bats at this point. And Jordan Walker's in AAA right now. Or did he get called back up? Did I miss that? But Jordan Walker, you know, is getting sent down. But
yes,
I'm wondering, and I don't know for this for a fact. I haven't looked into it at all. Maybe I should, but it seems like maybe some guys are just getting rushed and they need a little bit of extra time. Now, Jordan Walker's obviously had more time than Mason Winn to figure it out, and he's still struggling for one reason or another, but it just seems like the talent might still be there. They just might need a little bit of extra more than what they're getting right now.
Yeah, I agree. And Jordan Walker, I think we've talked about this before. I still wouldn't write him off. Like he's still talented, still should.
Oh yeah.
You know, have a nice career, but yeah, I mean, he was also the more hyped prospect, you know, than Wynn. And you look at, it's a good kind of dichotomy and example of what you're saying, because Wynn, I don't think, was as hyped. People weren't as excited, right? But he's quietly kind of putting together a nice season. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's almost hitting 300 with the 340 on base percentage. And Walker had the initial success and sent down. So I guess it's sort of like you think about what do you want your team to do? Do you want, it's exciting to get these big name prospects up, but then do you want them to come up, struggle, play the game of get sent down, sent back up, sent down, and then maybe and you know, a finally success, or bide the time a little bit longer and have them stay up once they come up. It's hard to do, especially in a fantasy real life. It's hard, but also in fantasy, mm-hmm. because you want to get these guys going, and it's fun. It's, you know, one of the best parts of playing fantasy and following baseball.
Yeah. And you know, the other side of this, that I think just needs to be mentioned really quick before we take a timeout, Nate, is that, prospects are getting more coverage than ever right now. That, you know, there's videos all over the place of almost any prospect that you want to see. And it seems like everybody knows who the top prospects are now more than ever. And it goes deeper. So if you're one of the top prospects in baseball, you're talking a top 100 list and you're in the top half of that, you're in the top 20 of that, whatever, you have so much pressure coming in from fans, from the organization, from that status. I mean, we talked about it with Jackson Holliday too, right? So there's just a ton of pressure there that you have to figure out how to deal with. And that's a whole other side to that. And Nate, we're going to take a quick timeout right now, but we will have more Coffee Talk coming up. Coffee Talk is part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network, where we are always ready for that next cup of coffee. And welcome back to Coffee Talk on the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Trevor Huth. Nate Kosher is with me. And Nate, before we jump into talking about other players, I do want to issue an apology to Martin Maldonado. We talked about how poorly he's been hitting. Well, I'll tell you what, over his last three games at the time of recording this, 4-for-10, 2 home runs, 5 RBIs. So if I'm not mistaken, that brings his season average up over 100. I believe it's at 108 right now. And he's working his numbers up there. So we'll see what happens.
Our apologies.
Yes. Yes. He is currently hitting 108 with a 365 OPS. So he's approaching 400. We're getting there. It's getting close to 400. We've had several debuts that I think are worth talking about. Rhys Hines is one of them. Rhys Hines has loads and loads and gobs of power. I believe I saw it with JJ Cooper from Baseball America tweet out today that he had 80 raw power, which is insane.
Wow.
He made his debut, and in his debut game hit a home run 449 feet. He absolutely demolished that baseball. And so if you're looking for power, maybe Rhys Hines is that guy. I can't promise you it'll be all that consistent, but do you know anything about Rhys Hines?
Not a ton. I've heard the name. I've seen the name. I'm looking him up here just to look at his scouting report. So it's good he's playing for the Reds, right, when we think about home runs. But also looks like he has a nice arm in the outfield. So perhaps his defense could get him some more playing time. It's an underrated thing we sometimes talk about. It says he's taken well to the outfield, where his easily plus arm plays, and when he stays on the field, he can make adjustments. So I think anytime there's a young prospect who comes up and is a power hitter, it's fun. I need to see this home run that you're talking about. I need to go watch that right now.
While you look that up, put this into perspective with Rhys Hines. Okay. He was hitting, 214, 216, something like that. Low 200s, in AAA this year. Through 77 games, it was 328 plate appearances. He hit 216. He had 13 home runs. His ISO was 193. Like he isn't going to, I don't think, ever make a ton of contact. I think what you're hoping for is just occasional power. I mean, 38.4 strikeout percent in AAA, 8.5 walks. So it's it's kind of giving Joey Gallo without the walks.
That's a true definition of a slugger right there. Home run.
Yeah. I mean, he's just going to be feast or famine, and it's going to be a bomb, a missile, or it's going to be nothing. And that's kind of where Rhys Hines is at. And that's his profile, really. So maybe be selective when you play him. I don't know. It's not a guy that I don't think I would be rushing to pick up in fantasy just because he will occasionally have the highlight power, but it's just nothing's going to be consistent enough, I don't think. For him to be worth jumping out to get on your fantasy roster.
So I watched his home run. He actually crushed it. Mm-hmm. And then the next video down is actually the St. Paul Saints game. Once again, I just mentioned the St. Paul Saints, but he hit a 494 foot home run 2 months ago, nearly out of the entire stadium. It just absolutely crushes it.
Power's absolutely insane, but again, he may never hit enough. I guess we're going to make this a Reds episode because we talked about Slater and stuff. Noelvi Marte also crushed a home run. He's returning to form a little bit too.
Yeah, and that was someone we weren't feeling so excited about and thinking perhaps he wasn't going to see maybe even action this year after getting suspended, working his way back from a suspension, but he hit a home run, which was interesting. And so maybe he will prove us wrong. Was expected to do well going into this season. And he's someone I would monitor, could potentially still make a fantasy difference this season if he gets back into, rhythm.
He could. And if just to be fully honest, I was never super high on him. I was always lower on him as a prospect than most people were. I don't know. He always had, pretty low strikeouts, pretty high walks, but I never saw it playing that well at the major league level. I know he had the good burst, but last year, he did pretty decent, but we'll have to see how it plays this year. I think Great American Ballpark might help him out. If he plays well, that's awesome. He's still 22 years old coming off that suspension, and can't really judge anything off his first, 10 games at the big league level. He is striking out 34% of the time, but again, he missed a lot of time, so he's readjusting. We'll see what happens there. We'll see what he looks like coming out on the other side of the suspension, but it is interesting to see him get back into form. Speaking of me being wrong to a certain degree about certain players, Joey Estes is another guy that I wanted to bring up briefly here because he very recently threw a 9-inning shutout. I believe it was against the Angels, but he's another guy who I saw him pitch 2 or 3 times live back when he was in high A with the A's. And man, to me, it never looked like he had the stuff to get opposite handed hitters out consistently. And that always worried me with him and worried me of what his ceiling would look like. But he's honestly settling in and I think pitching pretty well at the big league level.
Yeah, his last couple of starts have been pretty nice, and I saw I hadn't seen this term before. I want to see if you know what this is. He threw a Maddox, the game that he threw. So do you know what specifically a Maddox game is for a pitcher?
No, I mean, low strikeouts, low walks. I don't know.
So, yeah, I mean, you can kind of guess where it's going, but it's specifically a 9-inning complete game shutout in fewer than 90 pitches.
Oh,
sorry.
He threw 92, though.
A complete game shutout on fewer than 100 pitches.
Ah, there you go. Okay. All right.
Yeah. My bad. But I hadn't seen that term before. That's pretty funny.
Well, we talk about the string of good games he's had. His last three starts, again, I think he'll start maybe by the day that this podcast drops. But the three starts, including his complete game shutout, he is up to, looks like, 20.2 innings with 13 strikeouts and given up 4 earned runs and only walked 4. So he's putting it together a little bit. Again, the strikeouts are a little low. So fantasy-wise, he may not be someone who's jumping off the page, but just you don't see 9-inning shutouts a whole lot anymore. So it was really cool to see him do that.
Yeah, and when that does happen, it's fun to see. I wrote an article last season for Pitcher List just about how complete games are like dying, and now the role of relievers and middle relievers and openers and all of that has grown so much, and the strategy and beliefs have changed, you know, a ton. So when that happens, it's fun. But what I was going to say is, it's funny. It seems like we've continued to talk about Oakland A's guys. And they, even though the team can be completely horrible, by the way, Mason Miller was named to the All-Star game. He was the A's All-Star, but talent can still pop up on these bad teams. That's my point. And so you can't ever completely write off, like, well, I never look at anyone on the A's because they're not doing good. You know, there's still some guys can have individually nice games and nice seasons.
Yeah, and, you know, Estes was not originally in Oakland A. He was originally with the Braves organization before they traded him. So it's interesting to see. But if you look at the starting pitching right now, if you look at the rotation with, granted, Ross Stripling, Paul Blackburn, Alex Wood, all on the IL, that means it's J.P. Sears who was born in 1996, Joey Estes born in 2001, Mitch Spence born in 1998, Luis Medina born in 1999, and Hogan Harris born in 1996. We call that the opposite Cardinals. No, but they
exactly.
But these young guys are getting an opportunity to come up and show if they're worth it at the major league level. And maybe some of them might be trade deadline targets for teams. Who knows? But it's really cool on these teams like that where people can come up and kind of have their moment. I mean, I think back to the Tigers when Nico Goodrum was kind of their best player. I mean, he had a chance to step up and be the guy there, but that, you know, I don't know. There are opportunities for guys, and some of them do a good job taking advantage of it. I'm going to pull out another name. I want to hear your thoughts. If you know anything about him, do you know anything about Keider Montero with the Tigers?
I don't. I figured maybe he was on the Tigers, but that's all I.
I've been very patient waiting to bring this up, Nate. I've been very patient waiting to bring this up. Keider Montero.
Tell me. You tell me.
Keider Montero is the first and remains the only pitcher who completely changed my mind about him with one start.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yes, I was very out on Keider Montero. He spent a lot of time toiling kind of in that low A, high A area, and I saw him with the White Caps a couple times, and it just was never that good. He didn't have command. He didn't know how to use his pitches. I saw a guy who was throwing mid-90s with his fastball with a nice breaking ball, but he could never command it or really even use it because he was never in good counts. And I would sit and talk to scouts about him and be like, yeah, he's not really anything. You know, I have never seen it. And every scout that I had talked to was like, well, it's there. And I was like, is it though? It was there the whole time. I saw him. So I saw him twice and was very unimpressed. And then I saw him pitch a game against the Lansing Lugnuts in Lansing. And it went from being a guy who couldn't locate his fastball and had a nice 3,000 plus RPM breaking ball that he could never really utilize to a guy who threw five pitches all for strikes and looked like he had a rhyme or reason to how he was using them. And I guess I don't know for sure, but my theory was that he just didn't have the command or never put it quite together in order to be able to unlock everything that he could. But when I saw him put it together, I was so impressed. I was like, I get it. I finally understand it with Keider Montero. And I was ready at one point. I don't think it ever got published, but I was ready to put either a 45 or a 50 future value grade on him, when really before that he was 40, at the nicest value I could have given him. But
was it someone, did you expect it was one of the people he would have ended up in the bullpen and not even made a serviceable starter?
So long time, yes, but after that start, I kind of saw that he could be a starter. I never thought it was. I was super high on Reese Olson. Like at one point, I said Reese Olson, and I think this was 2022. I said Reese Olson and Jackson Jobe are the only Tigers prospects who have frontline potential. I was never that high on him, but I did think he could probably be a three or a four after I saw him, and he's come up right now, and he threw a great game against the Guardians tonight and has been pretty good since getting called up, to the point where I'm starting to see Tigers fans call to DFA Kenta Maeda and keep Keider up when Casey Mize comes back.
Wow.
I don't know that that'll happen. I'm sure that they'll just option Keider Montero, but he's been fantastic and he's been awesome and I'm super happy. He's a guy that I don't know what you're going to get from him day to day, especially in his first stint at the professional level. And I couldn't tell you if he's going to stay up that long right now, but if you can find him in a good matchup, maybe as a streaming option, I would go for it. His stuff is nasty. I think he got on Pitching Ninja with a 96 mile an hour elevated fastball for a strikeout today. He's got a nice breaking ball. I am a huge Keider Montero fan. I'm so happy that he is, I'm sorry, it's Keider Montero. I've been saying his name wrong this whole time. I'm so sorry. It is Keider Montero. But I am super happy to see him up and having some success, because that was a long road for him, if I'm being honest. So good for Keider Montero. Super happy. Super sorry that I said your name wrong this whole time. But Keider Montero, very, very talented pitcher. Real quick before the break, one more topic, because it's going to lead into what we're going to talk about during our last part. Have you seen Christian Yelich's first half?
I only saw he was named to the All-Star team as a starter, which surprised me. I have not been following him, but I saw his name listed as a starter, and I thought, well, he must be resurgent. He was awesome 4 or 5 years ago, so he must be back.
So in his first half 2018, his MVP year, he slashed .293, .364, .459 with 11 home runs, 12 steals, and a 123 WRC plus. This tweet is coming from Ryan or Brewpack 8 on X. This year so far, with 6 games left in the first half, he is slashing .329, .407, .553 with 11 home runs, 19 stolen bases, and a 164 WRC plus. So the numbers are pretty close, even a little better with 6 games to go before the first half ends for this season. But he's kind of having a little bit of a resurgence, which is really interesting.
And he just about won, if you remember, he just about won back-to-back MVPs. I think that – so he won the MVP in 2018, and then I want to say in 2019 his season was cut short – due to injury, if I recall correctly. But he had some just massive seasons from a fantasy perspective.
That was the year I think he fouled a ball off his I think he broke his wrist, or he fouled a ball off of his shin or something and broke something. I think that's the injury you're referring to. But, and I didn't say this back in 2018 and when he started to get hot, but like, it seems like it was a switch for him, because he was always pretty good when he was with the Marlins and everything. And all of a sudden flipped, and he was like this elite hitter for a couple years there. It was reminiscent of a hitter version of Jake Arrieta going to the Cubs, where it's like, what just happened and why are you the best at your position right now? Because it was never that before.
Yeah, you know, that's funny. You saying that triggered something in my memory. I read a story, and it I cannot recall the specifics, but it was after he switched to becoming a brewer and started to do very well. And I believe it literally had something to do with sort of his mental preparation for the game, like watching film and practicing and, you know, technique and everything. And I recall reading a story about how everything just sort of clicked with him, because he was pretty good on the Marlins.
He was never bad.
He hit 21 home runs with 98 RBI. Mm-hmm. 18 home runs with 81 RBI the two seasons before he went to the Brewers, but then he just kind of exploded. And now I'm sure I can't find that story, but it was something to do with, it just sort of clicked with him. So maybe he was able to rediscover whatever worked for him during that run. But yeah, good for him. He's fun to watch, and when he's putting it together, I mean, he's probably one of the top players in the league.
Either way, a really good trade for the Brewers. Trivia time. Do you know who the Brewers gave up to get Christian Yelich?
Oh, man.
I know it's going to be a tough one, because I believe it was three different prospects. Could have been four. But all of them, to my knowledge, did eventually play a game at the major league level. So they are all players that you may or may not know.
Well,
I'm confirming right now, by the way.
Stanton.
It was four prospects. Stanton. All of them played at the major league level.
No, I don't remember.
The first, and this was at the time the biggest name, Lewis Brinson.
Oh, I do remember Lewis Brinson.
Isan Diaz. Monty Harrison.
Okay. Don't remember him.
And Jordan Yamamoto.
And yes.
So the Brewers clearly won that trade.
Just
throwing that out there.
Big time.
Especially Brinson considering
never put it together, did he?
He never quite did. Neither did Monty Harrison. Both of them had amazing upsides. I mean, they could have been so much fun, but just never quite figured it out. And that's the case with some prospects. But it is good to see Christian Yelich kind of, again, resurgence. You mentioned he's a starter on the All-Star team. When we come back, we are going to talk about the All-Star rosters and the futures game rosters. Right now, we're going to take a quick time out here on Coffee Talk as a part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network, where we are always ready for that next cup of coffee. And welcome back to Coffee Talk on the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Trevor Huth, Nate Kosher with me, and we have been talking about some good performances. How about some good extended performances? The All-Star rosters have dropped. The futures game rosters have dropped. Let's talk about it, Nate. Let's start with these All-Star rosters, because they are probably going to be filled with guys we're just going to gloss over, because All-Stars are not necessarily Coffee Talk guys. They don't get their cups of coffee. Right. They've had them. But let's just instead of reading off everything, is there anybody on this list that surprised you? What picks do you like? And let's start there.
Sure. So starting with the, let's start with the National League. Coffee Talk, this did not surprise me, but I saw he's been in discussion to potentially start the All-Star game with Paul Skeens. I mean, in just the, I think, span of 10 games I saw, he's only played 10 games. It's obviously been electric. And I saw someone saying, you know, is he already the best pitcher in MLB? I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to go that far. Obviously, the hype is very high. He's delivered so far, but I would be surprised if he starts the All-Star game after, you know, only playing 10 games. Otherwise, another coffee talk, I guess, relevant. Jackson Merrill made the All-Star team. And so that's exciting. I think he has sort of turned it on as of late, having a nice season for the Padres. And so that obviously, I mean, he's probably someone you would have thought was going to be good, and he's actually delivering on it. He is, let's see, 12 home runs, 10 stolen bases. So that's kind of fun. Otherwise, you know, there's the big names. Mookie Betts is hurt, Freddie Freeman, Bryce Harper. I was happy with Ketel Marte, kind of the heart and soul of the Diamondbacks, getting back to the All-Star game. He was a starter like 5 years ago. So that was fun to see. And on the American League side, so I saw your guy Riley Green made the squad.
Woo!
Had to be happy about that.
Riley Green is good at baseball. I've been saying it for years. You can literally look up the term Riley Green is good at baseball and my Twitter handle at Huth Trevor. You will find so many tweets of me just tweeting out Riley Green is good at baseball.
And also Garrett Crochet is an all-star for the White Sox. May not be on the White Sox much longer, but the name that hurts me to see his name listed here, Jaron Duran. I had him in my 30-team dynasty league. I had picked him up off the waiver wire for like a dollar last season. Mm-hmm. After, I want to say he was sent down or didn't even start in the majors, but I knew he was a post-hype type of guy. And I traded him away for like nothing, I think for a relief pitcher. And the second half of last season, he goes on a tear. This season, he's playing unreal. I think he already has like 10 triples, hitting great, leading off for the Red Sox, tons of runs, tons of steals. So that one hurts. Don't give up on guys until you absolutely have to, Trevor. That's the moral of the story.
He was a tough one, even as a prospect, because he was a light hitting outfield speedster who could play defense. And all of a sudden he had this swing change or this approach change where he lifted his launch angle. And then all of a sudden he took off as a prospect. Interesting that Zidane Rafaela also had that. But and then Jaron Duran kind of fell off. And then all of a sudden, where'd he go? Like I was out on Jaron Duran. I think I had him in a fantasy league and I traded him away for nothing. And that was in my 30 team league, or maybe it was the other way. Maybe I was offered him and said no, but I wasn't going to pay a whole lot. I don't remember, but either way, yeah, that can be tough. I'm going to add two names to this All-Star roster talk. Elliot Ramos with the Giants. Really cool to see him make the All-Star team.
Oh, that's right. We talked about him.
Yes. And, I guess the other one I was going to say was Riley Green, because I'm just super excited about that. I am so happy. Oh, Isaac Paredes made it, which is kind of cool. He was a former Tigers prospect. He was one of their top prospects. Got called up, never quite put it together, went to the Rays, and get this, put it together. but, you know, he was kind of working towards that. It just was at Toledo where he started to focus a little bit more on power over contact, I think. And I think the Rays kind of have pushed that into him more often. And all of a sudden now he's in the All-Star game.
Year, right? Like he had a pretty good year. He had a pretty good year last year,
mm-hmm.
I think, for the Rays, right? And so,
yeah, that trade hurts, man. That was the Austin Meadows trade to the Tigers. And
oh my gosh. That's tough.
One interesting player from the All-Star game, Marcus Semien. I didn't expect it. I mean, he does have 12 home runs. He's hitting .232 though. So for him to get in the first wave of announcements for the All-Star game is a little interesting. I mean, I guess it's not obviously all based on your performance at this stage, but in terms of who else could have made it, like Francisco Lindor is having a really good season and didn't make the All-Star team, but we got Marcus Semien over here hitting like that. So that was a kind of an interesting inclusion, in my opinion.
Probably a name recognition doesn't hurt. They won the World Series last year. Yeah, he's not doing that great. You know who else I was actually expecting to make the All-Star game? We were just talking about the Oakland A's. I thought maybe Brent Rooker was going to get it. I thought he would have been the guy from the A's instead of Mason Miller. He's put together a really nice season.
Mm-hmm.
He's actually improved on what he did last season. Someone who the Twins gave up on, actually. But it's kind of like the main power hitter for Oakland. And maybe if, you know, sometimes there's those injury replacements, maybe he'll slip in. He's hitting .278, 18 home runs, 54 ribbies. So if he keeps it up in the second half, that's a nice season.
Yeah,
I'm surprised absolutely. He didn't get a chance.
Absolutely. So let's talk more about some coffee talk, guys. Let's look at the futures game rosters now, Nate. Before we even jump into players, I always love the coaching staffs, so I'm going to share the coaching staffs for those who have not heard. For the American League, their coaching staff will be manager Adrian Beltre, bench coach Raul Ibanez, Prince Fielders, the hitting coach, Francisco Cordero, pitching coach, Derek Holland, Nelson Cruz, Mitch Moreland, Kenny Holmberg, Ellis Andrews, all coaches for the American League. In the National League, Michael Young is the manager. Ian Kinsler is the bench coach. Mark Teixeira, Darren Oliver, Colby Lewis, Gabe Alvarez, Gary Matthews Jr., and Vernon Wells, all coaches as well. So I just love that they get these former players, and it's not just any former player. It seems like name recognition former players are the guys who always wind up coaching the futures game, and I think that's awesome.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun. Many home runs hit, if you were to add up all those names, the home runs that they had in their career.
That's just Adrian Beltre.
True. Soon to be Hall of Famer, Adrian Beltre. He's going to go in this year. I forgot, you know, I forgot about Raul Ibanez. That guy was clutch. Underrated.
Mm-hmm.
I would say underrated. Remember, he was played forever and like was a stud late into his career, just always hit home runs. I forgot about him. So
a younger version of myself, like high school version of myself, or maybe even younger. I don't know when I started playing fantasy baseball, but when I first started playing fantasy baseball, my like underrated guy that you just needed to pick up because he was just going to consistently produce was Michael Young. I always just wanted him on my fantasy teams because no one would draft him, but he was a consistent performer. And I was like, hey, there's draft value. So apparently I had the analyst gene in me from a young age, but with that being said,
a great baseball player. Yeah.
Yeah, he was.
I agree.
So with that being said, Nate, I think we probably need to jump into players that might help fantasy teams. Let's start here on the American League. I have the pitchers up right now. So let me ask, do any of these pitchers stand out to you?
Well, I don't know if we've talked about Noah Schultz, but he's someone I've read about.
I love Noah Schultz.
I think he has a bright future ahead of him. Another, for whatever reason, I guess we also talk about the White Sox a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe
are you noticing a trend?
Yes, the trend where maybe some of the help might be coming from the minors. But I think left-hander,
mm-hmm.
nice curveball. Fastball combination and just those big guys like that, like kind of like a Randy Johnson type. I think he's going to be, a good player for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Noah Schultz listed at 6'9" for those who are unaware. He's a very tall and lanky pitcher. A lot of fun. Love Noah Schultz. The two others that stick out to me, Caden Dana, I've heard really good things about, have not taken the time. Emiliano Teodo with the Rangers. Do like him. It's been a little bit since I've actually taken the time to like evaluate him as a pitcher, but he threw hard. Was hitting triple digits regularly when I was watching him and evaluating him. I saw reliever, but that could obviously have changed by now. So very interesting. Really cool to see him at the All-Star game. He is going to pump some gas. That's all I can tell you.
Yeah, and it's interesting, the roster we're looking at shows their birth dates, and these guys are so young.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Don't look at the birthdays. It's going to make you feel bad. Yes. So what about the hitters here on the American League side? For the sake of time, Nate, let's each pick two hitters to point out here.
Yes. Okay. Well, Brooks Lee is listed, so that's not very exciting. I'm going to throw him out. Kyle Teal, we've talked about, I think, before. Catching prospect with the Red Sox organization. And as we said, it's always hard to get catchers. So that's interesting. And then actually, I'm going to go another infielder, Ralphie Velasquez. He's listed as an infielder, but I thought he was also a catching prospect, if I am not mistaken. So maybe they're bouncing him around. Oh, he's listed as first baseman. I could have sworn he was a catcher. Oh, here it is. The Guardians drafted him as a catcher. He didn't play the position full time and is raw behind the plate. Okay, so I guess he's moved to first base. But he has a nice bat. I know I think I got him in a trade in one of my leagues. He's a top 100 prospect, so that name jumps out to me. Who are your two?
Well, one of them was Kyle Teal. So I guess I can't pick that. I can't pick him. No, I will pull out Hao Yu Lee from the Tigers. He was acquired from the Phillies last year in the Michael Lorenzen trade. When he was traded, I was like, you know, he hits pretty well. I don't know if there's going to be a ton of power. Well, he's up to 12 home runs the first half this year. So he's hitting with a little bit more power at the AA level. He's only 21. So he's been having a good season. I'm very interested to see how that works how that ends up. The other guy that I want to mention, I'm going to kind of go off this roster because it does say that there's going to be players in the future skills showcase that aren't necessarily on the roster. And one of those players is Trey Morgan. Trey Morgan's a first baseman. He was on that fantastic LSU team last year. And anytime I would watch LSU, I really liked Trey Morgan. And then he was drafted. He wasn't a first round draft pick or anything, but he was drafted by the Rays. And so I'm really interested to see what his career path looks like, because I don't know if he has the power that you generally would think of from the first base position, but he's very athletic, very fun to watch, good defensively, and I'm interested to see what his bat's going to do. So I'm going to pull him out just because he's taking part in that future skills showcase, and I am a fan of Trey Morgan. All right, let's move on to pitchers here from the National League. And again, are there one or two guys here that stick out to you?
Let me check this out here.
Well, while you're doing that, I'm going to say Tink Hentz, just because I've seen Tink Hentz live. It is electric. It is a lot of fun. He has a very, very loose and fluid arm motion, and it's so fast. It's whippy. It's a whippy arm. Right? There's nothing else, but it's smooth. It doesn't take a lot of effort. It doesn't look like. So it's a lot of fun to see. Plus, he's got really nice breaking stuff. So I know when he first came in, people were worried about him being a reliever. I've seen him live a couple times. I don't think he's a reliever. I will die on that hill. I think he has what it takes to be a starter, and I think he has what it takes to be a pretty good starter too. So I think Tink Hentz will be one of the guys that I pull out. The other one is Brandon Sproat with the Mets. He's another guy who just throws hard, another guy who I'm basing this off of the fact that I saw him pitch in a college game when he was with Florida. But I know I had a scout friend there, I had a buddy there who, I've worked with in the past, and we were talking. I'm like, I was just watching. I'm like, hey, man, Sproat looks good. So I was a fan of Sproat when I saw him live, and I think, again, cool to see him at the Futures game. Another guy who just pumps gas.
Yeah, looking at the list now, Bubba Chandler jumps out to me. Another good Pirates prospect. We've talked about Paul Skeens, but he's, if I'm not mistaken, I think he's the Pirates' top prospect. May not see him until next year. I don't know if we've talked about him or not. On the podcast, but he's going to be also a stud at the major league level, but may not see him, like I said, till next season. But it doesn't surprise me he's on this list. And then the other name is Chase Dallander. We've talked about him, haven't we?
Well, yeah. Most likely.
Yeah. So just another guy who's, I think it's going to be good. That's it for my analysis. It's not
all too right. Deep, hey, but that is fantastic. Do you want to move on to the hitters or just keep your momentum rolling here? Who are some hitters that stick out to you for this NL roster?
Yes. There's an infielder that sticks out, and a guy we've talked about back with the Diamondbacks organization now. And that's, how do you say the name? Is it Davidson, his first name?
Davidson De Los Santos.
Yes, De Los Santos. So we had talked about him. He had been up with the Guardians. Now he's back with the Diamondbacks.
Rule 5 pick with the Guardians, and he did not stick on the roster.
Thank you. There it is. Yes. Ton of power, and he's playing well again this year. So it's cool to see. And I think he's a guy who could be either third base or first base. The Diamondbacks have had struggles with their third base. So as a fan of the team, I'm happy to see him have success. And because of those struggles, I think, you know, he might get a look at some point. So that's my main guy.
Nice. Yeah.
I'll throw it to you.
All right. So, there are two that stick out to me. I think, well, there's several. I love the futures game, but, one is Bryce Eldridge, with the Giants. He's in high A. So I guess I'm veering away from coffee talk just to talk about prospects. I've missed it so much. Bryce Eldridge was drafted as a potential two-way guy, and is focusing on hitting. So he is there as an infielder and a hitter, listed at 6'7", 223, another big guy. Really interested to see, you know, what he looks like focusing just on hitting. The other guy that I want to talk about is Justin Crawford. Again, another guy at high A. I can't help it. I am always drawn to guys at lower levels. I think it's just because there's projection and it's a lot of fun to watch them and try to project it out. Justin Crawford, that is Carl Crawford's son, for those keeping score at home.
Oh,
nice. He's the Phillies prospect. And he's just a long athlete with projection left. In the videos I've been able to see and in the games I've been able to watch, I don't know. I really just kind of like his bat. I think he's got some pop in there. I think at times he can figure out how to, I think he does a good job of manipulating his bat through the zone at times and, you know, just making some contact. So he's still, again, got projection left, which means he's going to fill out a little bit more. But I'm pretty high on his upside as of right now. I think that, you know, there's some power coming. He's hit 6 home runs just this year. You know, he was drafted in 2022 and had 3 home runs prior to this season total. So again, high A, up to 6 home runs now, striking out 20% of the time, walking 6%. I mean, he's hitting really well at the high A level, and I'm really interested to see where that projection takes him, and I'm very excited to see him in the futures game. So I think Justin Crawford's a guy I want to pull out because he's a guy that I've really been trying to, what I think is going to wind up being buy low on in my dynasty leagues. Justin Crawford fan, what can I say?
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good reference. And Carl Crawford, speaking of early 2000s fantasy studs, he probably steal like 100 bases now.
Yeah, he fast.
He was the real deal.
Yep, and his son has 26 stolen bases in 68 games at the high A level. So the speed has been passed down. Yes, the speed has been passed down generations. Nate, always good to talk to you. Make sure to follow Nate the Great Kosher at Nathaniel Kosher on Twitter. You can follow me at Huth Trevor, and of course follow our podcast at Coffee Talk PL. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast, share it with your friends. We always appreciate you guys listening, sharing, and interacting with us. So thank you for that. We will have more Coffee Talk next week, maybe some more trades to talk about, who knows, especially with the All-Star break. But Coffee Talk will be back in a week. For Nate Kosher, my name is Trevor Huth. We appreciate you listening. This has been Coffee Talk on the Pitcherless Podcast Network, where we are always ready for that next cup of coffee.